Okay, we are recording.
Thanks, Brady. This is Steven. We're going to bring the meeting to order. And we have a quorum of six, so why don't we do a quick roll call. Steven Waite, present. Brady?
Present.
Dana?
Here.
Sherwin?
Here.
Lou
is here.
And who am I missing?
Roberto.
Sorry, Roberto.
I'm here.
And yeah, I guess everyone else is excused or absent. Okay, next order of business is the approval of prior meeting minutes. We've got June 14th minutes. Did everyone get a chance to look that over?
Yep, I'll make the motion to approve.
Okay, thanks, Brady. Any second? I probably don't need that with such a small number here. So all in favor?
All in favor.
Hey.
Aye.
Aye.
Great. And
yep.
And the July 12th. Minute. All in favor of approving those?
No nays. Any nays? No. Okay.
No nays.
So approved.
No nays.
Yeah. Any objections? Yeah. Okay. Good. And then the financial report, there wasn't a lot of activity. I posted the few, we actually had one sizable donation. It was like $500, which was great. And then after PayPal gets done with it, it's like $480 or something like that. They do take a little bit of a fee. And we had no expenses, I believe. And that's pretty much it. I don't think there's anything else to discuss right now, even any upcoming things I'm trying to think about. I tried to get Brady to take some money for the press releases, but he's making a pure donation to us, which is wonderful. Any questions about that report?
Sounds good.
Okay, unfinished business. How about I hand it over to you, Brady, since this is...
This is kind of Matthew and Robert's stuff. We did talk about it. You know, we wanted to talk about it more over the conference call. So we used the Saturday after the last board meeting because the issue is, and especially now, you know, MU3 definitely looks like it's definitely getting delayed. It's now... Meaningful use is now 90 days for 2018, and it looks like it's you can use 2014 criteria. So it's been delayed basically till 2019 at this point, and who knows what that really means, whether it's really going to happen. So I think it made a lot of sense actually to drop MU3 from our priorities and start thinking about other stuff. The things they seem to focus on were probably fire, was probably one of the top issues I think that we wanted to focus on. And then start to think about inpatient, not complete inpatient, but working our way towards that, maybe even with the hybrid inpatient, outpatient, long-term facilities. And then obviously modernization stuff. I think those were the big things. Those were really the big things, you know, the big priorities where it made sense to start maybe putting resources towards. And of course we have, Senna's group is working on most of those. Especially fire and the billing, which will, you know, that'll kind of, that may be related to inpatient, but the fire I think is going to be a real big thing for us to really focus on, because that'll drive a lot of other stuff.
Brady, this is Senna. Can you hear?
Yeah.
Can you give it? Yeah. We may post sample fire application as early as within next couple of weeks. We have made some enhancements to OpenEMR, still under draft, but unfortunately I am, like everyone else, I'm having serious challenges on resources and people issues. So the billing and other things may get delayed, but FHIR, I think hopefully before the next board meeting, we can post it.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would prioritize, if you have to, FHIR over billing, yeah. Because I think that's the really big, the big thing. So sounds good.
Brady, hey everybody, Matthew here. Sorry, I'm a little late. I was traveling. So I just wanted to mention, I think Brady summed it up well. The inpatient seems to be very exciting in the community. And one of the items outside of just, you know, supporting multiple units and supporting better inpatient workflows is getting actual medical device data sent to the EMR, primarily for the use outside of the United States, so we don't have to basically A, deal with FDA, and B, over-engineer solutions for these systems, because they want cheap but high-quality devices. So, yeah, that was another asset that we're kind of looking at, which has been really exciting.
Yeah, that does sound good. That was Lou commenting. By the way, just let me hold the floor for a second. This is Lou speaking. I don't know if it's possible to suggest for consideration of the board, in addition to the things that were just listed, as a quality reporting organization, Suncoast Rio, we were issued a number of API tokens for the ability for software to have an API from the government that would allow it to report quality measures, not just quality measures, but also the scores of how providers are doing with their quality measures. And our goal is to take those APIs and hook it into OpenEMR. And it struck me that maybe, Senna, you might be interested, because they are making some of these API tokens available to vendors as well as registries, because vendors may, you know, play a role in testing for other registries or QPP, so which stands for Quality Payment Program. So maybe I should write something up instead of just saying it for the first time here, but it could be that we could use an API token and could get one from CMS and have a portion of OpenEMR, have OpenEMR with the capability of reporting quality straight from internally using these tools.
That's actually a good priority thing to think about too, is quality measures, because that's obviously not going to go away. Meaningful use may, but I know quality measures are going to keep getting more and more. They're going to be more of them, more detailed and more complicated. And
yeah. So that is probably something we should... If anybody on the call wants to look into this, go to the website. It's www.qpp.cms.gov, and you can read about the quality measures. And then if you put / I think it's developer, you can see the sandbox and what they're doing with APIs. So they're moving pretty heavy on this with JSON coding and things like that. So it's qpp.cms.gov/developer, or just leave out the developer and go and look at the website, look at the public website, and then on the bottom you could see developer section. So
QPPS, that you said?
qpp.cms.gov, yeah.
Anybody have anything else to add for priorities that we should think about? Then I guess we can move on to the next. I'll leave it to Stephen for the next topic.
Okay. Thanks, Brady. It's the revocation update, and we haven't heard anything from the IRS, but looks like from the attorney's standpoint, we're going to have to initiate the appeal of this, even though we were kind of expecting something from them saying, oh, you know, you appealed, but we disagree and, you know, it's all over kind of thing. But spoke with the attorneys. They're going to redo the quote and revise the initial invoice for the research that they've done so far. It was good news. And I think that it seems like they really want to help us and have a relationship with us. And I spoke with the lead attorney who brought up Lou again. And, you know, Lou, thank you for getting us in touch with these guys. And especially the lead attorney is really nice, you know, that he would take this step and consider our situation a little bit more. So kind of hopeful at this stage that we'll come to terms with something and be able to have them take up the ball or take up this issue with the IRS on our behalf. So just kind of waiting again. I expect something pretty soon, and then we'll be able to hopefully discuss that next month's meeting, and then you know, finally approach the IRS about getting this 501c3 reinstated. So as it stands now, we are still, you know, revoked. We're not 501c3. We're just a plain old nonprofit. Like, picture Superman at that diner in Alaska or wherever that was in that movie, where, you know, somebody can just go mess with them. And we're hopefully going to be on our way to better times and grant writing and everything that Roger wants us to do for the future of open source healthcare.
I remember that scene that was a traumatic scene for a kid. I remember that.
Yeah.
That Superman scene. It looks like Roger's stuff is, I mean, it looks like for those things, you probably don't have to be a nonprofit for those government stuff that he was talking about. I haven't read his emails.
You look at each opportunity and it tells you who's eligible when you go to those things.
Yeah. I threw that in. I think that, you know, obviously we need this, you know, to keep OEMR going and make it attractive to receive donations. I brought that up with the attorney that, you know, our books are open. You can see, you know, that you've pretty much asked for everything we've got. And we just want, if we're going to get started, we want to complete this and we want to make it fair, because you're going to put in a lot of work. We're going to be hoping to ride this out. And if you ask too much, we won't be able to finish the job. And I think we'll all be disappointed in that. And so, you know, it was great. I think we probably are going to go forward with this. That's, you know, my hunch at this point. And it's just a good feeling that you know, we've got someone who wants to partner with us and I think understands our position a little bit better than maybe the initial, you know, review made us feel. So, good news.
Great. We'll get that press release ready.
Maybe Matthew could give us an update on the cloud work.
Sure. The press release is almost done, and that signifies the version 1 stable solution is ready to go. With this, it's a automated solution where all a user really has to do is enter in information such as the size of their database, the size of the file system for the patient documents, and domain name information. And once you do this, the cloud is put together and kind of just works. There's obviously maintenance need. You know, the user's going to have to be familiar with some basic, you know, AWS maintenance, you know, I guess, approaches. But we tried our best to document those, my team and I. And I think it's going to be going well. We'll find out how well it is for the end users when they actually try it, because it's not officially released yet. But Andre played around with it. He seemed to like it. He said it was boring, but I take it as, you know, okay, I guess it's better it be boring than confusing or something. So that was good. But at the end of the day, it's about $150 a month for a fully serviced cloud solution. And the team and I have been talking with Brady about setting up an even cheaper version for very low resource consumers. So we're looking at this technology called LightSail. And we can maybe get the cost down to like $5 to $10 a month, but it's certainly like version two kind of work. So that's the update. Roger, as most of you saw, gave a lot of feedback on the press release, which the community kind of gathered and worked on putting together. And that was really encouraging. So that's looking to be, you know, a Thursday or Friday release at this point. I need to kind of get my ducks in a row to make sure all the merges are done and the artifacts are present. But yeah, that's the update. Is there any specific questions about the solution or how we're going to be doing the release?
Yeah, this is Lou. That sounds like really good news. I have one question. The way you described it, it's a doctor could create, instead of downloading it onto their file, a doctor could create an instance on the cloud. So that leads me to two questions. Is that something potentially we could add into the Coast Guard RFI? Because that's new, that it wasn't available at the time. And the second question I have is, can this also apply to a company that wants to load it with many users and host it and use the client version in the cloud as a hosting mechanism since AWS is secure?
Yeah, so the first question, the answer is yes. But there's a but. It hasn't been fully battle tested in, you know, actual production use. So our little team kind of tested it and had Andre test it as well, but it's not, you know, something that has been tested against, you know, 4,000 hospitals or something. So just keep that in mind. You know, it might have some bugs, but I mean, it seems very solid and we followed all the best practices. I mean, we spent like 6 months on it, so it's pretty hard, but we need to, you know, really have that kind of breath of time testing it. So that's just something to keep in mind. But, you know, yeah, sure, add it if you feel like that's something that we could, you know, try out. And then the second answer would be, yeah, it's no problem. Other companies can use it because I believe the licensing is MIT. But I would defer to Brady on the actual merging status. Whenever we merge it into the OpenEMR repo, it becomes GPL. But as it stands right now, we have it as MIT because it's in a separate repo. And I know that's friendly for businesses to use and profit from, but I'm not so sure about the GPL.
Okay. Thank you.
Matthew, this is Sena. You got to be careful with the HIPAA licensing with Amazon. We got into legal trouble. Actually, one of our customers got into legal trouble 2 years ago and they went out of business. There is something called business associate agreement. If customers are putting real data, you are liable for it. So I'm not a legal person. All I know is what trouble we got into. That was 2 years ago. So you might want to look into it.
Right.
Yeah, that is good advice. We did everything in a private subnet, fully encrypted, and we used all the auditing tools to make sure it was HIPAA and BAA compliant. So the confidence is very high that it will be production grade and HIPAA compliant, that any user can go and sign a BAA.
No, the thing is, legally you are required to provide BAA. As an organization, when you host customer, legally you are supposed to sign BAA. I'm not technically asking a question whether it is secured or not. Legally, both Amazon and you need to provide BAA. The reason is we got into big trouble, one of our customers 2 years ago, because of that in Amazon Cloud. Actually, you know, they are no longer. Yeah.
Yeah, this is Brady. You know, Amazon, they streamlined that whole process. So it's a lot more simpler. They have this thing called Artifact that you go to and you apply for the BAA, and it sounds like they automated it all. So I think because they need to get healthcare.
Okay, good.
They need to get healthcare customers. So I think one or two years ago, I think it was a lot different. It costs a lot of money, and I think you had to go through a lot of hurdles. But now I saw this. They even have a name for it. It's called Artifact or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good. So if somebody is hosting, somebody puts the data, it's automatically BAA signed. Is that correct, Brady?
No, they have to know that if somebody sets up that cloud, they would have to go to, and it, this is even on the press release, they would have to, you know, go to the Amazon site and sign up for the artifact and sign that BAA with Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Through that process.
Yeah, Senna, I really want to repeat that. Thank you very much for bringing that up. I think it's very important because we don't want us or our any users getting in legal issue. But yeah, I think one of the nice things about the solution is since we, OpenEMR, the community, or OEMR, the organization, we're not actually hosting it. We're just handing off the scripts for the user to run. It's on them to sign the BAA, which is probably different from, you know, Vizolve doing it, because they would have to host it on Amazon. You kind of have to sign with BAA there. But yeah, but no, I think we're okay. I think we're abstracting that away. But they could definitely do it. But if they're in a non-U.S. country, then they might not care to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Great. That's good work.
That's great. Thanks for that update, Matthew. That's wonderful.
Yeah, very good.
How about moving on to the next topic for the community health centers and I guess it was the HRSA funding.
Brady, I guess I should probably, you know, this, I guess this okay. is really coming to a close, so not much to say about it. We kind of marketed it to try and get community health centers to apply for these large grants, and I'm not sure if there was any success. I know there were one or two people saying they had customers they were trying to get through, but I haven't heard anything back. And the application deadline was, I think it ended about 3 weeks ago, as I recall. So that's kind of it was great marketing. We got some good press releases from it, but I'll probably take that on.
Will there be a way to follow up to see which clinics actually did take advantage of that funding?
I'll probably send out another email. It's funny, you know, just like Matthew brought up in a prior, you know, project, when you try and contact all these vendors, and I mean, this email trail I send is probably about 40 of them. We only get few replies. One though, I forgot who it was, even took, you know, we actually had a template that was made to help them, you know, send it to their clients or anyone who had, you know, if people that, I think Sharon may have sent it off to more than 100, but it's some one company even put it on their website. So, I mean, there were people, there was definitely some interested parties, but mostly we didn't get much feedback, but I'll put it send another email and see if there were any actual clients that even, it'll be interesting to see whether anybody submitted applications. And then also, obviously, I think in September they get awarded. So then we'll find out whether any of those got awarded.
Nice. Much appreciated all the, the ramp up in marketing. You know, it's been noticeable. So good work. And moving on to the OpenEMR Roadshow, is that yours as well, Brady?
It's interesting. So we keep it on here. This is what Senna was talking about. So I'll let him, I mean, he already gave his ideas, the premise. And now our goal is to see whether it would be a useful, I mean, I like the idea where we kind of see who would be willing to have someone come in, you know, it would be more of a personal touching it, you know, clinics that want to, that have interest in seeing it and doing demos. And he was willing to kind of travel around and do that. But we haven't quite, we haven't gotten any, no one's really reached out to these clinics or anyone to see if anyone's interested yet. And Sen, is that about what you were thinking?
Yeah. But there is actually, last time when we talked, there were other places like conferences. Actually, there is one in Las Vegas. I think it is next month or October, I forgot. There is a billing conference. Probably we can go there and partner with somebody, like how we did with Medal. Brady, remember you connected us with Medal? So something like that, I don't know whether any of you have any connections, some billing company may be interested in moving away from ECW, considering open source, talk to them jointly, show the capability of OpenEMR.
Let me, Senna, this is Lou speaking. If the conference you're referring to, I think it takes place in Colorado, and it's ARMA, does that sound familiar to you?
No, not that one. Maybe that one is good too. This is what is called American Building Medical Building Association, EMBA. This is in Las Vegas in October.
Yeah. And those guys happen to be in Colorado. That's the same one, right?
Oh, okay.
Let me tell you from what I've learned about them. About 4 years ago, we managed to get some money up to send somebody to that conference. And a lot of billers are there. The people who run it is a married couple, and they've been doing this for years, and they really love what they do, and they give you a booth, et cetera. But the people who come there seem to be less sophisticated in technology. They're all there for billing. Then, so it may be very cool for you, but if you're looking at the open EMR thing, there's another billing association that competes with them. And I can't remember the name, but I could tell you, if you look up the name of the guy who runs something called Mingle Analytics, and his name is Dr. Dan Mingle, M-I-N-G-L-E, he has a high position on this other company that I can't remember the name of. And they're the ones who do a lot with technology. So if you look up Dan Mingle and look up, he's like the deputy vice chair or something. We may want to add that conference in, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because So hopefully that'll help you. And if you can't find it by the cryptic thing I just told you, I'll try to find it myself and send it to you.
Okay. That's good input.
Okay.
We're kind of leaning in the conference outreach category, which is one ahead of marketing. Brady, was there some other stuff with marketing that you wanted to touch on?
No, I think Horizon, trying to think, maybe thinking about doing an internationalization focus, but not really, nothing. But we're definitely going to have the press release for the cloud coming out soon, so that'll be, I think, a big deal.
Yeah. And any other conferences that I know Roger brought up the conference that's really coming up fast next week in Baltimore. I think I was reading about it, where the MMIS folks get together and talk about all things Medicaid, I guess. Everyone familiar with that? I mean, Roger's been sending like a lot of really detailed emails. It's incredible how much he can back into those.
It's tough for people to make that in such short notice. It's almost like someone has to live near there. I think someone.
Joyce can be Sherwin's backyard, right?
Yeah, Sherwin's there too. Joyce was near. I think it's a 2-hour drive for her, but she's working, so she can only go in the evenings. And I mean, I think we could definitely, if someone wants to go, we could pay. I mean, we could definitely cover their, looks like registration's about $600,
$650. I was going to try to go. I was, pushing my schedule around since it was starts on a Monday, I believe, the 14th. And Tuesday, the 15th, I was going to be in Richmond anyway. So I would be closer than where I am now, because Baltimore is a 3-hour drive from me.
Oh, okay. It sounds like there's a lot going on with the way they're trying to revamp the Medicaid program. I know, like here in Vermont, they're running really old servers, and this may be true in a lot of the country as well. So they have a technology hurdle, and it's pretty interesting what Roger's getting at here. Is just a lot of money is spent every year on this program, and looks like there's still a lot available going forward, which I'm wondering if the administration is going to start looking at that to cut next, or looking at that as, something under the microscope. But I haven't really heard anything about that. Roger didn't really hint at any of that either, so I'm not.
Well, this is Lou, the new head of CMS, Seema Verma, who works for Dr. Price of HHS. Seema is very Medicaid-oriented, and she did a lot in Indiana. and it looks like she's trying to roll out her ideas of Medicaid, not just to Medicare, but also to make the Indiana model work in all the states too. So it might be worth some time to look up what CEMA is doing. I can tell you we're doing work with Medicaid in Florida, and the biggest issue we come across, and it's huge, it may sound stupid, but it's huge, is we can't figure out a way for electronic signature to be accepted by all the various agencies that need forms filled out for like home health and things like that. The Medicaid people are just entrenched in the forms, in the paper forms. And that's our biggest challenge right now. So, but Medicaid is big. Medicaid is coming out of the dark ages very quickly.
Hey, Lou, I had some experience a long time ago with when I first started down this path of electronic records, because I had home health care clients. I come from a background of providing support, and we built an electronic form to replace the paper one. And it never took off. You would think that allowing someone, because the amount of time, I remember asking, she had stacks and stacks of paper. I said, how long it takes you to get through those? And she said, a week. And the system that we built would allow them to actually do the forms, everything in one day. And nobody wanted it.
It's very interesting. The Marigold form you're talking about, and it's for home health. And yeah, I know that. There's an entire group of people in Florida Medicaid who don't want to let that go. I don't know why. But yeah, you're right. You hit the nail on the head. That's our biggest problem, too.
Okay, moving on. The next subject is raising funds. And being the treasurer, I should probably lead off by just saying that I think we probably should update the OpenEMR webpage to say that we're not interesting meaningful use anymore. Maybe come up with a different message there to direct people to the donation page. I'm not sure what.
Yeah, this is Matthew. That's on my to-do list, but I've been kind of crazy lately and I have not gotten it done, and I apologize for that. What I was going to do was just change it to say, instead of, you know, asking for donations for meaningful use 3, I was going to say something to the effect of inpatient feature development, you know, inpatient feature set development or something of that nature. So if everybody's cool with that, I will change it, but I do apologize for the delay.
I would probably do like interoperability, that kind of thing. Because if you do only inpatient, then people are going to the outpatient be wondering, like, why would I give money to? I mean, you can put inpatient there, but I'd include, like, because that'll include fire, basically, if you do interoperability stuff.
All right, I think we should probably regroup and figure out what that should say, because you're right. We want to make sure the outpatient people are still, you know, actively contributing. We don't want them to feel like we're leaving them out, because these features will benefit them. But yeah, interoperability, fire, inpatient, we just need a better way of saying it. So yeah.
Seamless inpatient, like you just make it sound like you're basically trying to connect it all.
Yeah, continuity of care. Continuity of care in place.
And you definitely want to include inpatient, but you could, you know, then we'll do it in a way that basically everybody's covered.
All right, so tonight I'll put together a block of text and I'll send it to a few of you guys that just gave feedback, you know, so that would be, you know, definitely done here soon. So that's good. Very good.
Thank you. Cool.
That's great, Matthew. Yeah, I didn't mean to throw that on you. I didn't know you've been contemplating that all along.
Yeah, I've been slacking. I apologize.
Well, I remember you sent an email. It was only like a week ago when you sent the email that you wanted to change that message. Or maybe it was longer. Maybe time's flying by.
Yeah, it's been sitting on my to-do list. So I got to do it now that others have noticed that it's, you know, not accessible, have meaningful use anyway. Yeah, so all right. Very good. I'll definitely do that tonight.
That's great. Yeah. No worries. You know, it's a little ways scroll down underneath that. To me, it's kind of a static, that image of the guy's like hands or whatever on the desk. I think the website is great. Things are obviously moving in the right direction, but there's still some things that really could, you know, make it more attractive. But yeah, one thing at a time, and that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, Stephen, if you could send suggestions you have to Robert and I, that would be good, because, you know, we're always looking for feedback.
Yeah, and Robert's always, he always adds little things to improve it. Like, he's got these nice little transparent buttons on there now. I don't know if anyone noticed, but he's always adding little things. And he changed the logo, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and what he's done with the farm has been great.
So definitely any ideas you have, though, definitely, yeah. Let's
put them up. The only idea that won't be accepted is reverting it to the old look and feel.
Bring the PayPal guy, Pepe or whatever.
Yeah, never again, never again.
No more gifts? Okay, the conflict of interest policy, if there's any director that isn't familiar with that and hasn't sent an email to Robert saying that they will abide, then please take care of that. It's something that is important for us as a nonprofit and our role. I think we discovered this in, I think, the original filing with the IRS, and it's always kind of a good thing to have, I think, for any board, for-profit, nonprofit, whatever, just to state that, you know, you're here on your own, you don't have any other conflicts. So I think, is that pretty much it, Brady? Is that why that's kind of...
Yeah, I just keep it there because I don't think we've had everybody sign it. And we maybe next, I think Robert has it stored away. It's on one of the threads. So maybe next time we'll try and put a link there to it to make it easier.
Hey, Brady, this is Lou. I know I asked this in the past, and I'm sorry that I'm repeating it, but I forgot the answer. If, you know, my company, as well as others on this call, do have open EMR that we use for our business, does that mean we're out of compliance, or does that mean we're just, what is the conflict of interest form about?
Oh, it's more like, let's say we're willing to pay someone $1,000 to develop a feature, and people submit applications, and if you submit an application, it would just mean that you wouldn't be able to vote. I think that would be the simple way of thinking about it.
Yeah, that's easy.
That kind of thing.
Yep.
I don't know, Stephen, do you agree kind of with that? That's the gist.
I think so. I think, you know, looking it over, the actual document that's prepared by an attorney, it's good. It's informative. It'll teach you probably a couple things about the origin of OEMR, which is kind of neat. You know, it's an older document. I think we just kind of brought it into like open office or something, you know, gave it a newer look. But, you know, I think there's any situation where you ever feel like, oh, there's something I should probably disclose here. It's more to me, from coming from something, you know, like honesty, just saying, hey, you should let us all know what your connections may be to a certain issue. You know, the better communication we all have, I think that's what it's driving at, you know.
Okay.
Then we've got trademarking. I think we need to upgrade our trademark or renew with our new look, right? Because we left that.
Yeah, we're just, that's kind of an ongoing thing that Robert's been looking into. Mostly trademarking for OpenEMR, not really OEMR yet because there's no real logo. But for the OpenEMR logo, just thinking about trademarking that. So he's been looking into it. It sounds like it'll probably be several hundred dollars, but that's kind of, I just leave it there again, just as a reminder that not quite completed yet, but it'll be done.
Nice.
And same with June joining OSI. I know he ran into some hurdles. We thought it'd be easy, but he ran into a couple hurdles with that. So he's working on that application.
Okay. And I think that wraps up old business, unless somebody had something that didn't get brought up. It's on the new business. And we're going to vote for Daniel, but are we going to wait till next month till he's able to join?
Yeah, we're going to wait. He's actually, it's 2 a.m. where he is now, so actually probably 2:30.
Okay.
He's out of the country, so I told him we would do it next board meeting.
And then we're looking for sponsorship for the UB04. Is this something we want to kind of
I brought it up because
on the website.
Yeah, well, you know, I emailed everybody because, I mean, Jerry's been already working on it. This is the email I sent out about Jerry working on the billing. It looks really nice. He actually started because there was a customer asking for, you know, this billing And I thought it'd be a good way to get it funded, but the customer ended up not going with OpenEMR. And we kind of realized not having this billing, we're losing basically kind of the market of the long-term care facilities and kind of the hybrid outpatient inpatient facilities, weight loss facilities, anything that's kind of inpatient but more of a residential place seems to use these billings. So, you know, that's why I basically told them, well, the OEMR, this is definitely a priority because it is inpatient. So I thought it would be a good resource to, or good to use OEMR resources to actually pay him to do this. He agreed to do it for $2,000. He's probably done about half of it. It's pretty neat. He's been posting on the forum. It's kind of a different way. He's actually having it so that you can edit the UBO4 itself. It's still going to pull in data when it's all done, and it's still going to be mapped to places and things like that. But it's a pretty neat way of making sure that you get everything you need. And if you need to, then you could always go in and manually change things. And for the on the billing end, which I think is a pretty neat thing to, so it's kind of a different way of doing it, which I think is pretty innovative. But I the feeling I got was that when I sent the email, everybody was okay with it. So I let them know that we would, if you once it's in the code base, that we'd be willing to pay the $2,000.
Okay, I guess I remember that now.
Yeah, so it's more just kind of giving a, we should probably, I just want to make sure everybody agrees with that, obviously, but informally it sounded like it was okay on email, so I just want to bring it up formally.
Okay, that's right. Yep. Okay, so come back to me now. So we just want a forewarning now, or do we need to make a motion?
We can make a motion that we're willing to pay that once it's in the code base, and then at least he knows.
Okay.
Even though he trusts OEMR.
Yeah.
But I'll make a motion to what's a good word for it? Sponsor. Sponsor,
sure.
Jerry.
Just Owe It Reeves.
I'll
second that.
$2,000 once the billing the UBO4 billing module is inside the code base.
Great. Anybody opposed to that or any discussion?
And send us on here too. He is going out of his way to kind of, because we know we're going to have a huge billing module coming in. So he's going out of his way to modularize it so that it can plug into whatever we end up with in the end with billing too.
All right. Okay. I had a couple new business items I put on the forum I probably should have just added them to the agenda looking back on it here. It's a little lower down on the post. But I thought that Senna seems to be the president de facto of all of our meetings, Shamim just too busy, I guess, to make it. I thought it would make sense to elect Senna as president and then move Brady into the vice president role just so that we would have a full slate of officers who usually attend the monthly meetings. And I think, that would just make the board a little more functional and just better prepared for when someone doesn't make it, because, right now without Shamim, if one or two of the officers can make it, it really kind of throws things up in the air a little bit. So I think what I'd like to do is just make a motion that, actually, what I probably should do is just throw it out there to have Senna and Brady think about this, and we can vote on next month.
We swapped Senna and Shamim. What month did we do that? So we swapped.
Oh,
so Senna is the president.
Okay.
And you may not have been. I think that would have been maybe one year now, actually.
Actually, that is a good discussion. I propose we make Brady as the president.
Yeah, but we talked about this. It's like, because I'm the executive director, so I hate to.
You cannot duck for long.
Yeah, I'll keep ducking. But because the executive director, I in a way, that's a little bit, that's entails.
Oh, I see.
But I hate to do. That and even the vice president. It'd be nice to bring someone else in. But let me give Shamima an email and see what his thoughts are. He'll understand. He's been very busy with what his company, and I think he'll understand that we need to have someone who's present as an officer.
Yeah, that's why I brought up the next issue was just, articles our bylaws, I guess you should say the article in the bylaws, is that if you miss, I mean, the way it reads, it's not, you know, should or anything, but just honest that if you aren't making these meetings, you will be removed from the board. I mean, there's just no doubt about it in our bylaws. So in order to live up to that expectation, we really have to either amend the bylaws or take that seriously and keep a close eye on this. And I think, you know, we've been lucky to have so many people from all over the world be on our board, but the, you know, the responsibility is you have to attend every now and then, at least hopefully, you know, every month, but you can miss a month or two. But like Scott Wakefield, I know he added so much to the code base and then he came on for a little bit, but he hasn't made a meeting in quite some time.
Yeah, it's been almost a year. So he's probably the only one, I think, and I'll send him an email and see what his thoughts are too. I have a feeling he'll want to, at this point, probably not want to stay. He'll be agreeable to not staying on the board. But I don't know. I don't like the, I get like, I feel like that clause is so strict, right? Because we have people out of the country, mm-hmm. like some people, it's 2 a.m. where they're at and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, I mean, we can always say they're excusable. I guess what we should do is just call an unexcused absence like unexcused, but pretty much be lenient on what an excused absence is. And then I think we're okay, I suppose, if we follow the clause.
I mean, we've got room for 15 members of the board, which is more than enough. Yeah, we should always be looking for more board members, especially people with board experience, you know, anything to make us function better as a board or OEMR. And it goes back to a few months ago, Matthew brought up the fact that, you know, right now, obviously, our objective is open EMR, but being OEMR, we are allowed to look at other open source or, you know, healthcare prospects and kind of review our mission. We should keep an open mind and really try to get people on that want to do this type of work. That's pretty much it. And does anyone have any public or community concerns? Are they aware of or wanted to bring? Okay. I think our next meeting is September 13th and with that said, I think we're ready to adjourn.
Yeah, I'll turn on.
Here we are. This is Lou. I just want to mention to